and welcome to the final episode for the 2018-2019 season of the NBCSports.com College Basketball Talk Podcast. It is Tuesday, April 9th?
April 9th.
It is currently 4 o'clock in the morning. I am sitting here in room 925 with Courtyard Marriott in beautiful Minneapolis, Minnesota, with my colleague Scott Phillips, and we just witnessed what may be the best national title game of all time. We will get into all of that, but Scott, what's going on, man? How you feeling?
Wired, tired, just trying to figure everything out right now. As you said, Rob, we just witnessed a miraculous title game, one that I think surprised a lot of people because we saw the slow start. Many people assumed it would be a defensive struggle, maybe a score that would even be in the 50s, and it exceeded everyone's wildest expectations. We had star performances from name guys. We had huge shots from both teams. We had controversial calls and non-calls, and just so much stuff to go over just from this game alone.
It was so much fun and so tense, and honestly – and I guess we can start here, and we'll get into the game itself, but I didn't really buy into the idea that this was going to be an awful title game. I thought that we were going to be in for a defensive struggle. I did not think that we were going to be looking at 162 points scored in this basketball game. But I did not buy into the idea that this was going to be something that was not awesome, because we're talking about two teams. And yes, I know they're defensive minded. We're talking about the two best defensive teams in college basketball, whatever. Virginia, top five in offensive efficiency. They are actually, I believe right now, after this game, they have the largest efficiency margin in the history of KenPom's database, which means that you can kind of make the argument that they might be the best team in the history of KenPom. That's a different discussion for a different day. And Texas Tech is a team that went from being a sub-100 offensive efficiency team to being top 30. I just never bought into the idea that this wasn't going to be a great game. Yes, it would be slow. Yes, it would be possession by possession. But we're talking about two of the very best coaches in all of college basketball and two of the very best offenses that we had this season, especially down the course of the year. So I'm glad that it lived up to, I guess, what my expectations were.
And it reached kind of this unique status because it was two programs that had never been in a national title game before. You know, we've seen so many times where the Dukes and the Kentuckys and the Kansases and the North Carolinas and these blue bloods, these consistent presences in the Final Four and the title game are a part of it. And to see these fan bases, euphoric, both of them, great turnouts from Virginia and Texas Tech this weekend. And it kind of added another level to the atmosphere. It was a very unique atmosphere for a title game compared to some of the other ones I've been to, because really neither of these programs were anywhere close to Minneapolis. And yet you felt like it was a 50-50 split. And there were a lot of fans for both teams, both in and around the city. And it was an intense, fun, memorable atmosphere overall.
And that stadium was full.
Yes, packed.
It was full. Every seat was taken in that building, and I did not think that was going to end up being true.
And shout out to the local Minnesota fan base as well, who showed up seriously for everything throughout the entire weekend, 3-on-3 events and this and fan fests and everything. Like, the Minneapolis people came to everything that the Final Four put on this weekend.
The city itself is a very – it's a fun city. There's fun bars. There's fun places to go out. There's good food. There's unbelievable beer in the city. The only problem I have with Minneapolis is that it's freaking cold here.
It's going to be a foot and a half of snow about 2 days from now, and we're avoiding that, thankfully. It was beautiful today, though. 60 degrees, sunny.
Perfect.
I'll take it.
Perfect spring day, and we are in 36 hours. There's going to be a foot and a half of snow. It doesn't even say snow when you check the weather app.
It says blizzard.
So, yeah, I'm glad we're getting out of here when we are. Let's talk about this game itself. Before we get into where this kind of ranks in the pantheon of great national title games and great venues and great experience and great atmospheres that you've you've been in for a game. I want to talk about Virginia and what they went through and the fact that they were actually able to get this done and turn this into, you know, the first team to ever lose to a 16 seed to becoming the first Virginia national title winner.
They had four ridiculous games, basically, of their six wins during this tournament. Think about how they opened the tournament losing to Gardner-Webb. And everyone starts piling on the punchline saying, oh, here we go again. Virginia's struggling against a number 16 seed. We're going to see another flop from them. They're not deserving of a number one seed. They're a joke. The style of play doesn't matter in March. They turn it around and win. They get through the next two games, Oklahoma and Oregon. Not really impressive victories, arm's length. You know, they certainly got things done. But you look at the final three games of what they accomplished, losing in the final seconds even of all of those games. Carson Edwards goes completely bananas, 42 points. Virginia has to withstand the best individual performance of anybody in this entire tournament, somehow manages to come back despite Ty Jerome's missed free throw. Kia Clark throws it ahead to Mami Diakite, who has the presence of mind not to bring the ball down and keep the ball high and just shoot it right away, forces overtime, they end up winning. You look at the Final Four, again, another scenario where they are facing a deficit in the final seconds. Kyle Guy hits a three, they're down four. They're down three again. Kyle Guy is fouled, makes all three free throws, which is a tough thing to do in that situation. They end up outlasting and winning. And then again with this game, they've got so many things going against them. And what do? They end up figuring things out and winning. We say so many cliche things about team of destiny and all these other adages, but I mean, think about it. Some of these comebacks were just absurd.
They really were the team of destiny. And I don't know what Bible verse Tony Bennett read today, and I don't know what prayers he's been saying over the course of the last 2 weeks. And I am not even close to what you would call religious, but I very much think that at some point I need to just sit down with Tony Bennett and let him tell me what I need to do to better my station in life, because what he has been able to do during this tournament is incredible, man. It really does feel like this was always something that was meant to happen, and it's not just the unbelievable shots that they made. And it's not just the moments and the memories and Kihei Clark making the play that he made and Kyle Guy making the shots that he made and DeAndre Hunter making the two massive shots in the national title game. It was the fact that they did all that after losing as a 16 seed, losing to a 16 seed as a number one seed. It's very hard for me to put into words the way that this story came together and everything that happened over the course of the last 13 months for this program. I'll leave you with this, Scott.
Yeah.
If you were to make this a movie, if I were to give you this script and you were a movie producer, you would look at me and you would say, dude, this is not believable. Go rewrite this and make it so it's something that we might actually be able to sell as something that people think is possible in human existence.
You could make this a television series with five or six seasons, because think about it. Virginia's been a number one or a number two seed for all of these years and had all of these early flameouts, whether it was the back-to-back years losing to Michigan State, the blown 20-point lead in the second half against Syracuse, in the Elite Eight, where Malachi Richardson just absolutely destroys Malcolm Brogdon over the course of 10 minutes. The UMBC loss, the early shakeups in this whole tournament. I mean, just everything that's occurred with this program and all of these perceptions of Tony Bennett's program, what this Virginia team is, their capabilities to overcome the odds. I mean, when they got down at the end of the game, I'm not going to lie to you, Rob, some of the thoughts in my head for storylines were that this would just be another monumental postseason collapse for Virginia. Because we were looking at a situation where they had blown a double-digit lead, they were losing by 3 points at the end of regulation, and it would have been yet another opportunity missed for them to potentially close something out.
Opportunity missed, yes. But I don't think I would call this I would not call it a monumental collapse. And the reason I say
well, maybe not a monumental collapse, but you get what I'm saying. The perception being that they've continued to blow double-digit leads in the tournament.
That's fair. But I don't know if I would, like, I think when you get to this point, even if Virginia had, like, let's say DeAndre Hunter doesn't make that three at the end of the game, or at the end of regulation, right? And Texas Tech goes on to win 70-67, or whatever it would have ended up being. Yes, Virginia would be disappointed. But I don't think that you look at this situation. Losing that game is very, very different than what happened against Syracuse.
Yes,
or what happened against UMBC or any of those other teams, because they got there. When you're playing against a team that is as good as Texas Tech is, and you're playing in the national title game, somebody's going to have to lose. And I don't think that you can – if you can play for a national title, I think that says all you need to know about what your program is. And, yes, I'm not saying that Chris Beard shouldn't be disappointed because they got here and they went to overtime and they proved themselves and you're their elite, whatever. But he should be crushed. This might be the only chance that he ever has to win a national title. But he proved himself that he's good enough to get it done. Just because he didn't get it done doesn't mean he's not good enough to get it done. Does that make sense? Am I making a point here that makes sense?
Sure, sure. But it just, again, it comes down to the perception and the narrative. And no one remembers who second place is. Mm-hmm. The winners end up writing the course of history. And if Virginia had once again blown a double-digit lead, and again, this is not to discredit Texas Tech and everything they accomplished in that comeback, which we'll certainly get to, but people would have been talking about Virginia blowing this just as much as Texas Tech winning it, in my opinion. But DeAndre Hunter came through in the clutch. He has so many different guys in this Virginia
DeAndre
team.
DeAndre Hunter was so mother-effing good.
Surreal.
He was so mother-effing good.
On both ends of the floor. Surreal. This is why he has been in the top 10 draft conversation this year. And people keep pointing to some of the numbers and the fact that Kyle Guy and Ty Jerome, maybe some takeover guys who take more shots, but this is the type of game against a spotlight player.
We needed to see it.
Yes.
We needed to see it. And let's just set the stage for what it was. He had 22 of his 27 points after halftime. He missed his first seven shots, and he finished with 27 points and 9 boards in the national title game. He did all of that while holding Jarrett Culver, top 10 pick, NBC Sports, first team All-American, absolute stud, to 5 for 22 shooting.
And three of those field goals, I didn't count all of them. There might be more, but at least three of them came against other guys when Hunter was switched. So Culver went to work in the mid-post on, you know, Jerome. He went to work going off the dribble against someone like Kyle Guy. But whenever Hunter was on him, he stuck him.
Well, except for that bucket at the end of regulation.
Which was cold. So which was cold.
So
the spin
good.
To the left.
Cold-blooded.
Oof.
And look, Culver's a stud, too.
He is.
He's an NBA player.
One off night's not going to change things.
Yes. He did not have a good Final Four, but he is a monster. But DeAndre Hunter. So let me ask you this. I don't think we're not going to break this down play by play what happened at the end of regulation because, frankly, like, thinking through all of that right now, I can't do it. I have to go watch it again.
There's too much to digest. And to be honest, you should just read our stuff because we have a lot of stuff that breaks down the nuances of what happened at the end of the game.
And it's 4:22 in the morning. I'm wired. I'm approaching being awake for 24 straight hours. But let me ask you this. Where does this game rank for you in terms of best environments you've ever been in, best games you've ever seen, best national title games you can ever remember seeing? And even, like, you know, DeAndre Hunter, best national title game performances by an individual player. Where does this I'm trying to balance it in my head. And I think I would make the argument that this was a better basketball game. Well, not a better finish.
Sure.
But a better basketball game than what we saw in the 2016 national title game. That was the best finish I've ever seen. That's the best finish we're ever going to see.
Yeah.
But I think that this was the best basketball game I've ever seen in a Final Four.
To me, this decade, there are like three Pantheon national title games. It started with Butler-Duke, when we had that miss from Gordon Hayward at the buzzer, the, you know, the David versus Goliath narrative, mm-hmm. the fact that it was in Indianapolis with a pro Butler crowd that was just going ballistic at the fact that they were able to compete with Coach K and Duke and just be in that game just to begin with. That was up there for me. A great game. You mentioned 2016, which, you know, Chris Jenkins and that buzzer beater will live in the annals of sports history forever. Mm-hmm. It's, like you said, probably the greatest ending of any game we'll see.
And people, don't forget Marcus Paige.
I was just going to say, people overlook the Marcus Paige double pump jumper, which is just an incredible moment in and of itself that gets overlooked so often in that game. But again, when you talk about the Texas Tech rally, Virginia subsequently rallying with that Hunter three, the fact that it's the first overtime title game since 2008, the star performance of Hunter, the first team All-American battle between Culver and Hunter, just, again, it exceeded every conceivable expectation we could have had from an aesthetic standpoint, from an outcome standpoint, from a star power perspective. Like, you know, again, maybe not the close outcome of 2016 because of the 8-point push at the end, but it
still went to overtime. We had a shot with 13 seconds left that forced OT, and Texas Tech had two shots in the last 5 seconds to win the game. It was
a 2-point game in overtime with a minute 6 left when Hunter strips Moretti and that call overturns. So
let's talk about that. Sure. 'Cause you wrote about that. Talk me through. I still have not seen a great replay review of what actually happened. So just talk me through what happened there, why that call was made, and whether or not you think it was the right call.
So it's a 50-50 ball around midcourt. Ty Jerome misses a jumper. It, you know, kind of gets back tapped. It's in the air. Moretti comes up with the ball, and he is racing towards his basket. Kyle Guy is flanking him a little bit behind him, and you know, DeAndre Hunter, the National Defensive Player of the Year, quickly closes on him coming from his left. Moretti really doesn't see Hunter immediately. Guy is pursuing him. There is a clear-as-day Getty Images photo where Guy's arm is basically on Moretti's midsection while he's dribbling. So there are a lot of people, you know, in seeing the replays or maybe even seeing it live. I didn't see this with my naked eye myself at the time. Who believed that a foul could have easily been called right there on Kyle Guy. And again, in that scenario, Texas Tech is down 75-73, and there's about a minute 10 left in the game. So you have that going on. Then you have Hunter, who comes in and makes an incredible defensive play, by the way. He clearly cuts off Moretti, who's trying to attack the rim. He strips him of the ball while Moretti's dribbling with his right hand. And it looks, again, to the naked eye, as if it's going to be Texas Tech's ball. Mm-hmm. But upon the slow motion review, upon looking at the different angles, you can see pretty clearly that the ball rolls off of Moretti's pinky and it touches him last. And so the call gets overturned. There's controversy. People are saying this isn't in the spirit of what replay is about. This is not what the merits of what we should be looking for. And there's something to be said for that. But there's also the flip side of it where had we not had replay and it clearly did show that the ball went off Moretti, that those same people would still be arguing that we didn't get it correct. So you can't have it both ways. Things are not going to be perfect. The human element of officiating is not going to be perfect, but that play, that momentum shift where, again, Texas Tech is down 2 points, they think they're potentially having the ball out of bounds with a possession to tie or take the lead, and then Virginia gets it, Ty Jerome is fouled, he makes it a two-possession game, and Texas Tech never had another opportunity to tie or take the lead the rest of the game. And that play is going to be talked about, it's going to be discussed, the merits of replay and what we're about and what we're doing in the last 2 minutes of games are going to be discussed. But ultimately, DeAndre Hunter made a great play. Moretti dribbled into traffic. He missed a trailing Jarrett Culver who was open. I mean, again, it's tough to really fault Moretti for not looking behind him to see the trailer. But Texas Tech also had a timeout. If your guy's in trouble dribbling towards the basket and the nation's best defender is coming towards you, you can easily call a timeout and get out of that situation if you're Chris Beard or if you're one of the Texas Tech players. Moretti made the decision that he was going to attack the rack and try to tie the game. It got stripped from him and ultimately didn't go their way.
What was Texas Tech's reaction to that?
So I spoke with Moretti in the locker room, and again, he sounded as if he was upset not only by that, but the play in which Kyle Guy was attacking the basket while Texas Tech was leading in the OT and was and tripped, basically. And again, the replays show that he tripped over Mamadi Diakite's foot and not over a Texas Tech defender. A foul is called on Moretti. Guy drains two free throws. That's another scenario. I think it was about 2:45 left. I don't have the notes in front of me. But again, there are two calls like that that kind of change the momentum of things. But again, to Moretti and Texas Tech's credit, they basically said, you know, you lose the game not on a singular play or two moments or whatever. You lose it for a bunch of different things. And you can point to Texas Tech not having a field goal the first, you know, 6 or 7 minutes, obviously struggling offensively, not containing Hunter, leaving him wide open with 13 seconds left. There are a litany of reasons why you can point to why they lost or why Virginia got back in. And to say it was because of a call or a missed call to me is silly.
Yeah, it's just funny to me that we're talking about another Virginia game where they were the beneficiaries of some friendly officiating down the stretch of the game. So to switch gears a little bit, after the game, I ended up going to the Virginia team hotel, and to set the stage for you a little bit, like the thing that was really that stood out to me about it was, like, you walk down the street and there are just Virginia fans everywhere, and you walk like past any bar and there are just Virginia fans in there celebrating, and you walk into the team hotel and the hotel bar, and I mean, we've all, anybody listening to this has been to a hotel bar, you know how it's set up. The hotel bar is basically the lobby.
Sure.
And it was one in, one out to get into the hotel bar.
That's pretty much setting the stage right there.
Yes. You walk in and, like, there's singing, we are the champions at the top of their lungs. There's beers being handed out left and right and back and forth. And there's a group of guys sitting there in the lobby with their own bottle of Wild Turkey and paper cup, like the paper coffee cups,
sure,
that you get,
sure,
that you make the coffee in a hotel room, filled with Wild Turkey, and then giving them out to people and just ripping shots. There's a guy running around with a shirt that says Maryland Sucks. I don't know why he had a shirt that said Maryland Sucks, but it said Maryland Sucks in all UVA letters, and they're celebrating. Walking down the street, there was a police SWAT team vehicle driving down the street with a cop and a UVA jersey, throwing basketballs to people, little basketballs, throwing them out to people. It was a party. And I got to go upstairs to the team and player only event, and it felt like it was nothing in there but relief. And it was the contrast between the celebration that was happening in the lobby and the way that these players were celebrating with their family was just, it struck me. Because it was like they came in and it was hugs. They came in and it was just kind of like, oh, man, like I'm so glad we got that done. And I'm not saying that they weren't enjoying it. But based on everything that's happened with that program and everything that happened with UMBC and everything that happened, with the narrative of what Virginia was and the expectation that people had for them going into NCAA tournaments, being able to finally say, yes, we won. Yes, we went and got that national title. It was like a weight off their shoulders. At least that's what it seemed like to me walking in there.
I totally agree with that. And obviously every fan base is euphoric after winning a championship, particularly something as random as the NCAA tournament, which to me, I'd argue is the toughest thing to win in all sports, given the randomness, the one-off nature of things, whatever you want to argue with that.
It is the best way to determine a champion, and it is the worst way to determine who the best team is in the sport.
That's a great way to put it. And again, you talk about the demons of last year. how Virginia was literally a national laughingstock. They were a punchline. They had memes made about them. Everyone kept bringing that loss up, even months into this regular season, when it was quite apparent that Virginia, A, was an ACC title contender, and B, a national title contender. People would still bring up that UMBC loss as if it were an inevitability that Virginia was going to collapse again, if not to Gardner Webb. And so for them to kind of get over that sense of relief and to have these big moments and these crazy comebacks these last three rounds, and not just having it be one person. We've talked about Diakite and Kihei and Kyle Guy and DeAndre Hunter and Ty Jerome. They had so many different players really step up when the spotlight was on them. It wasn't just one superstar that carried them through this. It was an entire roster of guys who had been through this collective pain together, new guys who had come into the mix like Clark who hadn't experienced it, and they all rose together and went through this. And they deserve to celebrate. Virginia fans deserve to celebrate as much as any championship team I can recall in recent memory, besides maybe the Cubs in 2016.
Yeah, it was just such an unbelievable game to me. And it's not just the result and the way that it played out and how stressful it was. Like, I had no rooting interest in this game.
No, me
and
neither.
I felt like my heart was going to cave in.
Yes.
The stress of just sitting there watching this happen was unbelievable. And the tension on every single possession in that building was unbelievable, and how loud Texas Tech fans got,
yes,
and how loud Virginia fans got, and the environment was unbelievable. The game was unbelievable. The finish was unbelievable, at least in regulation.
Sure.
And but to me, the thing that really stood out was that there was no bad outcome. Like for us,
sure,
when we root for the story. And we root for the best thing that we can write about. And we root for the best column that we're going to be able to write. And you root for the way that you can – you almost root for the narrative. And I hate to phrase it like that, but it's kind of what it ends up being, right?
We have a skewed perspective. But, again, as basketball fans, and there's a reason that we cover college basketball, because we love it and we have loved it our entire lives. This isn't just – a sport that we kind of got cast into. We both pursued covering college basketball. We want to see a great game. We want, yes, to be a part of a classic game. And to have it happen in such a fashion where, again, these two teams...
But it's not just the game, Scott. It's the fact that the result of what it ended up being was either Chris Beard, who was so likable, and his staff, who was so likable, and the players on that roster, who are all just so likable and so easy to root for. Either they were going to win a championship, or it's Tony Bennett, who is just such a nice guy, and the antithesis of everything that's going on with, like, the FBI corruption scandal and everything that fucking Michael Avenatti, or whatever the hell his name is tweeting about. And I don't think that... Can you think of a program in college basketball that you would say is cleaner than Virginia? Maybe Purdue,
Wisconsin.
Maybe Wisconsin,
yeah.
Maybe Michigan. But, like, Virginia is very much in that conversation. And they're the ones that ended up winning it. While they are also the team with, you know, Kyle Guy, so likable. DeAndre Hunter, so likable. Ty Jerome, so likable.
Mm-hmm.
And so easy to root for. Given everything they've been through and kind of what their public image is in terms of, like, oh, people hate them because they play so slow and they're all the defensive minded, whatever. There was no bad outcome to this game. And, like, look, I know Texas Tech fans, if you're listening, Chris Beard, if you're listening, like, I get it. Like, it sucks. I feel bad. I'm not trying to say that what happened to you, like, you should take a moral victory out of it. It should hurt. If you're a competitor and a loss like this doesn't hurt, then, like, you're not actually a competitor. But for us, like, for people watching, for people that are uninvested, there was no bad way that this could end. And it actually ended the perfect way in a thrilling, unbelievable, hard-fought game between two teams that were unbelievable defensively and had their like ceiling game on the offensive end of the floor. This played out perfectly for me, and I had so much fun tonight. I think that's the best way for me to put it. I had an unbelievable night.
There are all these little moments within the game, atmosphere-wise, that stood out to me as well, and that was a lot of fun. And you know, around the under 12 timeout in the second half, they show Ralph Sampson on the Jumbotron. And
people went nuts.
Ballistic. And at the under 8 timeout, they show Patrick Mahomes and Michael Crabtree. Texas Tech fans go nuts.
The best part about that, by the way,
Travis Kelce.
Was they show, like, this happened in two straight games. Pat Mahomes was sitting right next to Travis Kelce. And they show Mahomes, who's obviously a Texas Tech alum and
MVP of the NFL, and one of the most popular.
But everyone knows it. But he went to Texas Tech.
Sure.
And so he's on there doing his like kissing the biceps thing. And Travis Kelce, his tight end, when he gets put on the big screen, just goes next to him. He did this in two straight games and just chugged the rest of his beer. And not only chugged it, when it was gone, he held it up so that every last drop would get in his mouth while he was on the big screen. It was absolutely hilarious.
It was like a 12-second tall boy chug. It was pretty impressive. But suffice it to say, you have this incredible game. You have these two fan bases who are riled up. You have star power from both sides, historically speaking, that they keep showing on the Jumbotron. And you see guys like Malcolm Brogdon and Justin Anderson hugging Tony Bennett after the game. They're hugging Dick Bennett after the game. Virginia had basically everyone who had been relevant to that program, everyone that had been an important pillar to what Tony Bennett and his staff have built to this point, come through and celebrate with them on the floor. And you could see their happiness and the relief that they probably felt as well because of all the things that they had gone through with some of these painful losses and memories.
You know what the best moment of that game was? When they put on Old Town Road and Texas Tech made their comeback. But you know what Virginia did? They rode their horse down that Old Town Road. I think we're done here. It's 4:41 in the morning, and I think it's time for us to go to sleep. So we appreciate everybody listening, and I think at some point we're going to catch up again and maybe talk about preseason top 25, maybe talk about all-American teams, maybe talk about something where I don't feel like I'm cracked out at 4:45 in the morning, Central Time.
And just real quickly, shout out to our colleagues, Travis Hines, Raphael Johnson, for having great coverage throughout this NCAA tournament. Thank you to all of the readers, all of the listeners, all the critics, the tweeters, who always support or hate CBT, who always give us whatever attention that is that we put into this, because we love what we do. We're passionate about it. We are lucky to be in this position, lucky to see games like this, lucky to talk to you guys about this. And again, to the city of Minneapolis, who was a great host and a lot of fun this weekend. Great turnout locally from a lot of these fans who are clearly passionate about basketball. And just a fun, memorable Final Four during a weekend in which not a lot of people had expectations for that being the case.
Yeah, I didn't have very high expectations for this Final Four, and it absolutely exceeded it. Minneapolis, your weather still sucks, but you are a very, very enjoyable city. And Raphael Johnson, thank you very much. Travis Hines, you can kiss my ass. And Scott, another great season in the books, brother. So we'll see you guys later. We will catch up with you eventually at some point when I finally get caught up on sleep.
Thanks for listening. Follow me on Twitter.
Give me 5 stars.